Hi, and welcome to this bonus episode of the Message Podcast. I'm Sam Ward, the Director of Ministry here at The Message. This is Mates on a Mission, a special audio version of the TV show which is currently broadcasting on Message Live, on our Facebook and YouTube channels, and on message.org.uk/live. Head over there to check out all our other great programmes that we've produced to help equip you for mission. In this episode, I'm chatting with Miriam Swanson. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Mates on a Mission. It's great to be with you. Thanks for joining us today. We are joined by the legend that is Miriam Swanson, all the way from America. She is the, let me get this right, global student mission leader for Fusion. How about that for a title? How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. It's just past 9 o'clock in the morning for me. So whereas you've done most of your day, I'm just beginning.
Wow. And what a day. Today, we might even find out who the future president of the USA is.
Yes, what a delight. What a delight this week has been. Yet more opportunity for the Lord to form us in the waiting.
That's it. Yes, very much so. Yes. So when I think about you, you are possibly one of the most gifted individuals that I know. I love it when you speak. Incredibly inspirational speaker. You're a spoken word artist. Would you describe yourself as an evangelist? Is that in your sweet spot?
Oh, 100%. I didn't know what that was growing up, but as soon as I found out what an evangelist was, I was like, oh, my childhood makes so much more sense. So, Okay. Yes, I definitely own the evangelist label and the accountability that comes with that around equipping the church for mission. Yeah, definitely.
Great. Well, tell us about growing up then. What was that like? Like, at what point were you an evangelist then?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm a pastor's kid, so it's a bit sort of surprising that I didn't know what the word meant. But as always, you know, lots of things go over your head, particularly when your dad's talking, I think. So, I'm homegrown. My parents know and love Jesus. And so I had the privilege of being introduced to him from day dot, really. Right. And so I think the evangelism bit in me kind of came out in probably my mum sort of tearing her hair out of the fact that I'd make friends, particularly strangers, and bring anybody home and then anybody to church. And then, gosh, I even remember in primary school, I mean, it's cringeworthy now, but I wrote my own worship song when I was like 10 and got my mates to form a Christian pop band. None of them were Christians, but we formed a Christian pop band and performed in both school and church with this one song I'd written about the miracle of Jesus. Wow. And I'm like, number one, I can't believe I still got mates. And I'm still mates with those girls as well. Number two, gosh, how annoying. But I genuinely was like, get my friends in church and share Jesus through song, through words, through actions. So yeah, when I found out an evangelist was like, you almost can't help yourself when you're evangelist. It kind of pulls out of you to share Jesus with people that don't know him. And you almost get all better with people that don't know Jesus yet in terms of, you know, you get a bit of cabin fever if you spend too long. Yeah. In church buildings with just Christians, and you're thinking, gosh, who else are we inviting though? Then I was like, I can see this across my whole growing up, even before I really owned that as a young adult and realized, gosh, I can play my part as a leader in this as well.
Oh, and I can't believe that you can still remember the words and that you're going to sing for us now. That'd just be awesome.
You know, I can remember. Remember the miracle, remember the birth, Jesus is from heaven and he came to earth. And then genuinely, the bridge, no, there was like, I genuinely included the written verse, as a genuine part of a lyric. So you're welcome. I blame the Spice Girls, to be honest.
This is like priceless material. I feel like we could use this. And actually,
you didn't expect this to come out, did you?
I know, because we've got some incredible like producers here. I can take this recording and we can put some music to that. There'll certainly be a meme out there by the end of the day with your face on it, with that.
A great regret of being recorded constantly is that threat looms forever in me.
Yes, yes. So you obviously, that's your life, your ministry, you begin to outwork your giftings, you go to university, you begin to work for Fusion from like year two, is that right?
I know, right. No, so I came across Fusion my second year of uni, and as soon as I graduated, I got a job being their first kind of full-time student mission developer. So I'd learned what student mission was at uni by being a student. I'd learned at the power of the local church, coming alive to the idea of reaching the campus as part of that intergenerational body, because my local church was really committed to discipling students as part of what it meant to be church. And so I thought, this is gold. Imagine if every different church of all sizes and denominations and expressions, imagine if everyone had the confidence to have a go at reaching young adults, you know, rather than just, I hope at some point they come to us on a Sunday, but what if you went to them on campus and loved and discipled them? So, yeah, I thought, gosh, I'd love to serve Fusion. I honestly thought I'd do it for a year because I thought I'd run out of stories of student mission by then because, you know, like I've got some stories of sharing Jesus with my housemates, but that'll probably be done in a year. And this is my 10th year serving local churches, reaching students all over the world now. Wow. And it's almost like we've only just started, even though we've been going for over 20 years as a movement. I started when there were 5 of us. There's now, I think, 26, probably more in the pipeline of people being called and in lots of different nations as well. So, yeah, it feels like we've only just begun, which is amazing.
Love it. So does that mean you've never really had a proper job then?
Oh, that's a classic line people say, isn't it? You know, that's really rude. I obviously have had jobs like teaching. So, you know, I've taught in schools, theatre, bits like that. But it's been definitely more summer jobs or on my gap year. Whereas my full-time paid job has been raising my own salary ever since I graduated. Yeah.
Blimey, how hard is that?
It's a privilege. It's a wonderful opportunity to put your money where your mouth is, quite literally, around does God provide and does he do it through and in community? And so to have a team of partners who pray for me, encourage me, and in little standing orders give to my salary, and that's true for every single person in Fusion, it's actually amazing how that feels like you've got the Holy Spirit's wind in your wings because you have a community behind you that say, we know this isn't a normal job, we know the government's not going to fund evangelism on campus, but we'll play our part. So I actually think it's a huge privilege to live a kind of funny old lifestyle like this.
Wow, that's so ace. What a great way of looking at it. I really like it. Talk to me then about the global thing. You know, you've got global in your title, but Fusion I would have known initially as a UK thing. So is this part of a broader growing vision? And, you know, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I suppose we're realising that anywhere you go in the world, there is a disconnect between young people and the local church, particularly that transition kind of the last 2 years of school, how they end up being discipled into a transition into young adult life. And obviously Fusion's expertise is for the half that decide to go into some form of higher education and so probably end up in a campus environment or in that education environment. The other half, in the UK, it's kind of 50-50. We definitely want the local church to be reaching as well. And there's lots of crossover around how to reach young adults, regardless of whether they do education, apprenticeships, or go to work. But our call really is to focus on the campus. And I suppose the more we've met people from all over the place, the more they go, oh yeah, gosh, no, we've got a disconnect between the church and young people as well. You know, you might have some wonderful student-specific on-campus ministries, but that disembodiment between the rest of the local church, other generations, and then what happens when you graduate is still proving quite a problem everywhere. So we've ended up, you know, particularly in Europe, focusing on really talking to other nations, church leaders, denomination leaders around what does it look like for you to reach 20-year-olds and play your part in that, and not just hope somebody else is doing it somewhere else, but really be that family of every generation that's on mission together.
Love it.
And gosh, it's taken me all over the world, hence the global thing has been in my title for, I don't know, like 3 years, because you get random invites. Like, we've equipped churches in Singapore, obviously America, which is where I'm sat now, Canada, just some bizarre places where the whisper of the Holy Spirit's been like, I know it looks little, or I know you've not heard of them, but go and tell them what's possible through the local church. And then before you know it, you're like, well, this Singapore feels like an alien planet. Like, it's this tiny country of like space agey sort of architecture. And I'm talking to all these younger leaders about not giving up on the local church, but becoming the kind of church on a mission that they want to see on campus. And you're just like, gosh, following Jesus is pretty mental, isn't it?
Love it. So, you know, I've read some statistics that say 80% of Christian students who go off to university fall away from faith or don't connect with local church. Is that a statistic that you know? And do you see that kind of perpetuated around the world? Tell us about the need and tell us that.
So over a decade ago, some research was done that created this sort of broad look at students that identify as Christians on campus and whether they are part of Christian community when they identify. And although what comes under the bracket of identifying as a Christian those of us who are kind of active participants in the local church might have a slightly higher bar for discipleship in that respect. But they found that roughly 72% of students that identified as Christian were not engaged in Christian community, particularly obviously we were interested in that local church piece. Now, we would have anecdotally guessed about 70% just because part of our work is to help parents, youth workers and church leaders think about their 18-year-olds and what happens. And so we knew it was a roughly 70%. We just didn't spend like £500,000 finding out in a survey. I would say now we've got this really interesting kind of tide turn where the students that are, that there's a wave coming through with Gen Z where basically we're seeing freshers show up on fire who know local church isn't a priority, not an afterthought for later in life. And so we're seeing smaller numbers of highly committed disciples really engage with church from the start and mission. That has changed in the last 10 years because I think the teaching's changed around you can share your faith with your friends. University is an opportunity, not just scary for your faith. And local church is a key lifeline from birth till death for how you live out faith in community. And so we're seeing high levels of commitment from the ones that do commit, but we're also seeing a higher proportion of students with no Jesus background. And so if you went to anywhere in the UK, you would probably struggle to account for more than 1% of a student population in any university location connected to local church. So we are talking roughly the 99% who are out and about. That doesn't mean they all don't know Jesus or have some form of an understanding of God or hope in him, but finding and connected to local church, that is still a massive struggle. As student populations grow, we really need the church to grow in confidence for reaching them with it rather than shrink back. And obviously there are some places where the stats have really been turned on that. And there are some anomalies and funny pockets where there's universities that have potentially more active Christians going there and other ones that really, really struggle to get anyone from a church background going there. And so those stats look a bit different. In America, you know, they would say at least 50% of their young adults are kind of churchgoers. Even maybe up to 70% would call themselves Christians, but the proportion of that who think Jesus is central to their faith is very small, because we're still swimming in a fair amount of cultural Christianity, particularly here in the South. So working out what it means to be a Christian here when they're all Christian, but that doesn't necessarily mean it transforms their life. And it doesn't necessarily mean they would say they know Jesus personally and he is the make or break reason why they're a Christian. That's a very different conversation here. Whereas in England, if you meet a Christian and they're 20, it's probably cost them something. They've been a minority in faith. I bet they met him.
Yes, come on. I would love to talk to you about the importance of mission and evangelism sitting alongside community. I sense that was a bit of a theme in your book, Living Mission. You know, I just explore that with me for a second, the importance of community in particular.
I just so firmly believe in the sort of pattern God set up around, I mean, God himself being a communal God, sending himself to the world in the community of humanity, God even making humanity out of his community. You know, we have decided to do this. We are creating them in our likeness. I think we're made for community, out of community, sent to community, called to community. I don't think you can be a follower of Jesus and experience the fullness of what it means to love God and to love others on your own. Of course not. How do you love your neighbor if you don't have one? And, you know, I just know Christian community has been vital for me staying the course and loving Jesus in every season of my life and making it through school, thriving in faith rather than letting, you know, people that bullied me for my faith get the better of me, or feeling like I didn't know how to be in a party and still love Jesus. And the community has been vital all the way through, even through lockdown. Yeah. Small group is the one thing my husband and I stuck to, particularly in Florida where you can sit outside, so it's much safer for distancing. Our small group accountability was the one thing that we made sure we continued regardless of whether everything else was closed down. You know, we just made that an absolute priority, even on the months I had to be on Zoom, like, because we're not made to go this alone. And you're certainly not made to go this in a Christian bubble either. Hence, as soon as I moved here, as soon as I moved into the last place I lived in Middlesbrough in England, I door knocked because I'm like, set the tone. If you want to meet your neighbours, you've got this transition window where you're new and they're wondering, what does it look like to live next to that person? Show them. And it probably means saying hello and getting names quite quickly, because you can't do this on your own, even in terms of knowing and understanding the good news, unless you're sharing it. I just think you learn about good news by sharing good news.
I love it. I love it. You speak in my language. I mean,
yeah, I bet.
I talk about the opposite of poverty not being prosperity, but the opposite of poverty being community. And I really love how you talk about
beautiful.
That. And how, actually, when we talk about attractional church, I hate that connotation, but the most attractive thing about the church should probably be the way that we love one another and how we form communities around a love for Christ, this bond that draws us all together. Mm. And then you then mentioned there about that move to Middlesbrough. And I love that transition window stuff. I talk about you only get really one chance to be new, and it gives you a chance to be a bit weird and have those awkward conversations with the guy who runs the corner shop where you introduce yourself. And, well, we used to be able to shake hands. And so, you know, I did it with my guy. You know, we had a brand new shop open up, a new corner shop, and it was called Iffy's. And I went in and I said, I just thought it was a brilliant name for a shop.
Yeah, Iffy. Brilliant.
So I said, who's Iffy? And he was like, I'm Iffy. And I said, Iffy, we'll be friends. Like, I'm going to buy milk off you every day for the next 10 years. So we need to get to know
amazing.
Each other. You only get those chances once, don't you? But
yes.
Yeah, talk to me about, you know, what did you experience in community? What was beautiful about Middlesbrough? You know, we don't just go there to minister, but we're minister too, aren't we, while we're there? Talk to me about your experiences in Middlesbrough.
It's actually been really fun, thanks to our dear friend Facebook, the blessing and curse that is. All the memories are coming back from basically autumn 3 years ago, when all this new ground was being broken sort of weekly with making friends. So it's been actually a delight to have all these photos thrown back of, like, gosh, the first time that the Jordanian guys who lived, they moved in next door to me. I've been really praying some students moved in next door. We'd had a bunch of families sort of come and go very much in the night, very much sort of trashing the place. And I was like, do you know what? I'd love some students there that I can make friends with who stay. And then these two Jordanian brothers turned up, this was actually a year in. So I thought, I'm getting to know how to love my neighbours here. And then they blew me out the ballpark. They just, like, smashed it. They turned up with olive oil from their olive grove in Jordan as a welcome present, and literally said, as your neighbours, it is like, I mean, these guys had a Muslim background. So they were like, as your neighbours, it is our job to welcome you and to love you. And I was like, you've just done what I've been trying to do better. That's amazing. So yeah, this photo came up of when we all had this huge spread of Jordanian food, because we'd been cooking for them. And I knew that, you know, cooking for one another was a really important part of connecting with people from other cultures. And the lads just cooked this outrageous spread for me and a bunch of the students I was working with. And that's when I started to say things like, oh, love your neighbours, a two-way street. And true equality and true friendship means that this goes both ways. And I knew that, but I really experienced and embodied that in my time in Middlesbrough. And in fact, a lot of my neighbours were much more comfortable in their own homes. So I'd had them all around first. But realistically, I didn't have a TV, which was a huge cultural, like, mind-blowing moment for them all. Couldn't understand it.
I don't get it, to be fair.
Right? Whereas they're these massive flat screens, and so it was much easier for them to have me around all the time. And so we were in and out each other's houses all the time, and, like, yeah, when there was something that we all, like, desperately wanted to watch, we'd do watch parties. And just recognizing, gosh, this totally went both ways. Even though most of my neighbors weren't employed, and I was, no one was from the south, I am, no one had got a degree, I do. So there's loads of reasons why I should have been a total alien. And they were nervous of me at first. They were suspicious in the sense that they're like, why is she so friendly? Why is she talking to us? Why is she asking me questions? Is she the police? There was one terrible moment where one of them accused me of being a police officer, and that would not have gone well if on my street. And then genuinely the other one just went, you're joking. She can't be police. Who in their right mind would choose to live here in this? And then I won't repeat what she called the street. She went, she's not police, she's a Christian. And I was like, this is perfect. This is perfect. You've just fought for me so that my car doesn't get keyed, and literally explained the reason I'm here isn't because I'm undercover police, it's because I'm a Christian. And I thought, something's going right here, isn't it?
Oh man, love those. So amazing. You know, I have a small confession. I was at one point dreaming of going to plant an Eden team in America somewhere. A couple of places.
Oh, no way.
Bronx. But I actually looked at Jacksonville because the levels of like deprivation in Jacksonville, when you're looking at Florida, are well, like they're like, it's, yeah. So tell me the difference. You know, that's where you're living now, Jacksonville, Florida, if I'm right.
Yes, that's right.
What's the difference? What can you tell me is the difference between Middlesbrough poverty and Jacksonville poverty, if you've experienced that?
Goodness me. I mean, I'm still on the learning curve. And obviously, excuse me, 2020 has been another level of eye-opening in terms of we know that in crisis, the poor get poorer.
Yeah.
And those that were already downtrodden, that the opportunity for them to get help when they need it in crisis, if they're already not being able to access opportunities to get help normally, you know, we know it's going to get worse. So in a way, that there's been a baptism of fire around the state of the US and locally what's going on, because everything's opened up much more obviously in 2020. I actually live, thank the Lord, on a really eclectic street where we've got in the South, obviously, there's a much stronger history of racism and slavery. And so you're still looking at very segregated communities. Mm. And so one of my huge concerns with moving here, even though I felt like it was the right move for my new marriage and the right thing the Lord had asked of us, Ben and I cried my eyes out leaving Middlesbrough. That was the biggest heartache, was leaving my friends on my street and being so nervous that I might, what if I move into a white middle-class bubble where I don't make friends that aren't like me again? Because that transformed my faith, and it's so unhealthy not to do it. Like I just think it's so detrimental to our lives to not be exposed to people from different economic and ethnic and cultural backgrounds and to really be friends. And so to end up on a street that isn't segregated, ours is probably 50-50 people of color and kind of classic white Americans. And we've got the whole mixture of like retired, loads of different sort of unemployed through to massive families through to, I mean, opposite me is basically a rock band trying to get famous. And so we've got hilarious band nights on Tuesdays. They all turn up in tie-dye with long hair and just like rock out. It's just really funny. They're wild. They're called the Vagabonds. I don't know whether they're any good or not, but from what I can hear, they're banging.
Find something. Just
right. So yeah, I'm seeing a bit of a kind of mixture of things, but definitely poverty hold hands here with systemic racism. That's very, very obvious. Whereas in Borough, I had friends from so many different nations on my street. Mm. You couldn't draw the lines quite as simply, because some were refugees, some were seeking better work and from Eastern Europe, and some were unemployed, British born and raised Borough. Like, it's a whole mixture. Whereas here I'm like, it's much more obvious that the racial history has cost some people more than others. And that's very, very uncomfortable.
Wow. Is proximity different in that, you know, population densities, the way that our cities are kind of laid out? I imagine Middlesbrough, your estate in Middlesbrough was very, very similar to mine in East Manchester. Yeah. Terraced housing.
That's right.
Like, the walls are thin. You live almost cheek by jowl with...
Yeah, you feel like you've got housemates. I lived on my own, but I didn't feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in America, you know, there's just loads more space. And actually, the way they've designed towns, cities, everything's a bit more spaced out. Does that make interacting with people, relating with people, you'd have to work harder at that then?
Definitely. You've got to be more intentional. Obviously, you've got a culture where people drive everywhere. So it's much easier to avoid whole parts of town or seeing things if you want to, because you get in your car and you go a different way. So like downtown has a high real homeless population. It's a real problem. Obviously, homelessness is a huge problem. And I can't drive still here delightfully because COVID shut down the driving license office. So that's fun. But so I can't often drive to like the ghetto, essentially. But one time me and my sister-in-law were driving through downtown. And what a bizarre moment from Miriam. There's an African-American man stood at the crossroads at 10 o'clock at night, and he sort of waves and asks for some food. And in all of my, like, I mean, should know better, but also I hope I don't quite ever change from doing this, I got out the car with a bowl of salad, which is all I had.
That's the worst thing. you couldn't.
What are you doing? And I just went, hey, all I've got is a bowl of salad. And I just got out at, like, in the middle of the night, in the middle of downtown, in the bit that's like the most shady, essentially, locally known as. I got out and offered him a bowl of lettuce because it's all I had. And obviously he just laughed and was like, I'm actually fine, thanks. And I was like, okay, sorry. Got back in the car and just thought, that was a bizarre interaction, but there's part of me that so wants to make friends that I just got out with salad. Gosh, that was unhelpful.
Right in Acts chapter 4, silver and gold have I not, or is it 3? But a bowl of salad.
I can give you lettuce and spinach.
Yeah, I can give you lettuce. So, we're running out of time. We're really, really short of time. Is there anything that you feel like God is laying on your heart right now that you want to share with us? You know, something that is stirring within you?
Well, I mean, as always, Love Your Neighbour has changed my life and will change your life if you let it. And so I just reckon at the moment, certainly in the United States and with division that happens when everyone gets afraid of fear of lack, of distrust of government, of fear for the future, the temptation to then create your own fortress and try and stay safe for you and your own is high. And so I think the invitation of God in this time is love your neighbour. Your neighbour might well be your enemy. Your neighbour might well be somebody that doesn't know how to love you back right now. But I think it will be radical if us as the people of God can lead the way in acts of generosity and bridge building in a world that's very divided and very afraid. So, yeah, for me, love your neighbour is trying to take on a whole new meaning right now, particularly in the United States.
Love it, mate. That is so, so good. What a way to finish us off. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's good to chat.
Yeah, thanks, mate. God bless. See you soon. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, why not share it with a friend? And don't forget to check out all the great programs we're producing for Message Live on YouTube, Facebook, or at message.org.uk/live.